On June 19, 1865, in Galveston, Texas, Major General Gordon Granger stepped onto the shoreline and issued General Order No. 3, the Emancipation Proclamation, signed more than 2 years earlier, was finally being enforced. In that moment, approximately 250,000 enslaved Black Americans learned they were free. But freedom, as they would soon find, did not mean equality. That first Juneteenth celebration in 1866 mixed jubilation and pain. Newly freed people reclaimed their identity through prayer meetings, barbecues, and community gatherings. Texas officially recognized the day in 1980, and it took until June 17, 2021, for Juneteenth to become a U.S. federal holiday under President Joe Biden. Thanks in part to activists like Opal Lee, whose nickname Grandmother of Juneteenth captures her lifelong dedication. Today, Juneteenth is celebrated with reflection, learning, and joy, barbecues, live music, parades, and educational events. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1, Galveston's Shoreline. The Last to Know. It was a sweltering morning on June 19, 1865 in Galveston, Texas. The Civil War had officially ended 2 months prior, but in this remote corner of the Confederate South, time seemed to have frozen. For over 2 years, enslaved people in Texas had continued to toil in cotton fields and kitchens, unaware, or purposefully kept ignorant, of a truth that had already changed the course of American history. They were legally free. That truth arrived on horseback, in the form of Union Major General Gordon Granger and 2,000 federal troops. Granger's mission was simple but monumental: to deliver and enforce President Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation, which had gone into effect on January 1, 1863, but had yet to be honored in rebellious Texas. What he read from the balcony of the Ashton Villa became immortalized as General Order No. 3. The people of Texas are informed that in accordance with a proclamation from the Executive of the United States, all slaves are free. For the enslaved men, women, and children who heard these words, it was a surreal, disorienting moment. Preserved. Some gathered in church basements. Others hosted backyard cookouts. The stories of Galveston, General Granger, and the last enslaved Texans were whispered to grandchildren. Juneteenth became a private archive of history, shared through song, prayer, and storytelling. Jim Crow's psychological war. Perhaps the cruelest element of Jim Crow wasn't the laws. It was the message: you may be free, but you will never be equal. Black Americans were reminded of this daily. Water fountains, train cars, theaters, restrooms, restaurants, cemeteries, each bore signs meant to humiliate. A Black person could be lynched for looking a white person in the eye or speaking out of turn. In this environment, celebrating Juneteenth was both an act of defiance and therapy. It was a way to say, we survived. It affirmed dignity in the face of degradation. It preserved memory in a society built on amnesia. Many white Americans during this time had no idea what Juneteenth was. It wasn't taught in schools. It wasn't on calendars. It didn't appear in newspapers. It lived in the hearts and songs of Black America. A celebration, nearly erased by the 1940s and 50s, Jim Crow had eroded much of the public visibility of Juneteenth. The World War shifted national focus. Civil rights leaders began emphasizing broader federal change. Black communities, striving to be seen as American citizens, often downplayed regional traditions like Juneteenth in favor of more universally accepted commemorations like the 4th of July. And yet, it never fully disappeared. Small towns in Texas held on. Churches passed down oral histories. Elders told children, this is our day. Juneteenth was never completely erased, because it was never fully surrendered. Chapter 4, The Civil Rights Era, Juneteenth Rises Again. By the 1960s, the United States was burning with unrest and possibility. Sit-ins, freedom rides, boycotts, and mass marches were erupting across the South. Black Americans were no longer asking for equality. They were demanding it. In the midst of this nationwide reckoning, an old tradition, once muffled by segregation and migration, began to rise from the shadows. Juneteenth. At first, it reemerged as a whisper, an echo of the past remembered mostly in Southern Black communities. But over the course of a decade, it became something more, a bridge between the struggle for civil rights and the memory of emancipation. In a movement anchored in protest and progress, Juneteenth offered grounding, a spiritual heartbeat, a reminder of the first freedom, still unfinished. This chapter explores how Juneteenth survived the Jim Crow era and found renewed purpose during the fight for civil rights, and why, for many, it became a rallying point for cultural identity and political resilience. Memory reclaimed. In the early days of the civil rights movement, Juneteenth was still largely a regional tradition, centered in Texas and surrounding states. Most Black Americans outside the South had little connection to the date. That began to change not through top-down legislation, but through grassroots remembrance. Churches in places like Dallas, Fort Worth, and Houston never stopped hosting Juneteenth prayer meetings. Community leaders made sure children knew the story of General Granger in Galveston, and each June 19th, older generations retold how their grandparents had celebrated with music, food, and freedom songs. It was more than nostalgia. It was historical reclamation. As the struggle for civil rights intensified, these small acts of remembrance gained power. They offered a timeline, a sense of continuity, a reminder that the fight had not started with Rosa Parks or Martin Luther King, but with centuries of resistance, stretching back to the very moment of emancipation. Civil disobedience and historical resonance. Juneteenth's message fit the era. The civil rights protests of the 1950s and 60s were built on challenging unjust laws and reclaiming dignity in public spaces, buses, lunch counters, courthouses, and universities. Juneteenth carried that same defiance. It celebrated Black autonomy and joy in a country that tried to erase both. Civil rights leaders recognized this connection. Though Juneteenth wasn't formally at the center of their campaigns, its spirit was there, in songs like We Shall Overcome, in speeches that invoked the Emancipation Proclamation, and in the vision of full citizenship that went beyond mere legal change. In fact, some of the most powerful events of the movement took place on or near June 19th. In 1968, just 2 months after Dr. King's assassination, thousands of protesters gathered in Washington, D.C. for the Poor People's Campaign, demanding economic justice. It culminated in Resurrection City, a protest encampment on the National Mall that lasted over a month. One of its final acts, a Juneteenth commemoration, cultural identity through celebration. As Black Power ideology took root in the late 1960s and early 1970s, Juneteenth found a new kind of relevance. Leaders like Malcolm X, Stokely Carmichael, and organizations like the Black Panther Party emphasized self-determination, historical education, and cultural pride. Juneteenth celebrations began to reflect these values, transforming from community picnics into cultural festivals featuring African drumming, poetry, fashion shows, and political education workshops. No longer just a Texas tradition, Juneteenth began spreading to cities like Oakland, Chicago, and New York, carried by the children of the Great Migration, who were now becoming adults. Public events were organized around storytelling, voter drives, and economic empowerment. Elders passed down ancestral knowledge. Artists and musicians used Juneteenth as a platform to express Black pride. And across generations, the day became not only about the past, but about what the future could still hold. Texas leads the way. In 1979, something remarkable happened. Texas, a state that once delayed emancipation, became the first in the nation to officially recognize Juneteenth as a state holiday. The legislation was introduced by State Representative Al Edwards, a Black lawmaker from Houston, who believed that the holiday could unify communities and educate future generations. His campaign was not easy. Many opposed it as unnecessary. Others dismissed Juneteenth as just a Texas thing. But Edwards persisted. His argument was simple. We remember the 4th of July. Why not remember the day freedom actually reached Black Texans? The bill passed, and in 1980, Juneteenth became a state holiday in Texas. Schools began teaching it. Public events grew in size and importance. Other states began to take notice. A movement grows. Throughout the 1980s and 90s, Juneteenth began to expand beyond Texas and the South. Civil rights veterans, community organizers, and Black churches introduced it in
new areas as a form of cultural education and resistance. It wasn't just about celebration. It was about truth-telling, about acknowledging the full arc of American history, including its darkest chapters. At a time when school textbooks often glossed over slavery and Reconstruction, Juneteenth offered an alternative curriculum. It taught that freedom wasn't given, but fought for, that legal declarations weren't enough without action, and that delayed justice is still a form of oppression. In many cities, Juneteenth parades became a yearly ritual. Politicians began showing up to speak. Businesses donated food or tents. Media outlets slowly started to take notice. Still, for many years, it remained a grassroots tradition, powerful, but largely ignored by the wider public. Juneteenth in the age of mass incarceration. Even as the holiday grew, the late 20th century brought new challenges. Mass incarceration ravaged Black communities. The war on drugs, mandatory minimums, and police violence replaced the chains of slavery with the bars of the prison system. In some cities, entire generations of Black men were lost to jail, probation, or early death. Juneteenth, in this context, became even more urgent. It reminded communities of what freedom should mean and how far the nation still had to go. It offered space to grieve, to protest, and to imagine alternatives. It became a form of therapy, resistance, and organizing, often all in one afternoon. And through all of it, elders kept telling the story. Galveston, 1865. Granger, General Order No. 3. A message that arrived late, but changed everything. The legacy of the civil rights era on Juneteenth. By the year 2000, Juneteenth was officially recognized in more than 30 states. Black communities across the country were commemorating the day with both pride and pain, aware that the promise of emancipation was still incomplete. But they kept showing up, because Juneteenth had become more than a memory. It was now a declaration. We were never just slaves. We were survivors, builders, leaders, creators. It was the civil rights movement that gave Juneteenth its second life, not by accident, but because the two were always spiritually connected. Each stood for the same unshakable idea. Freedom delayed is not freedom denied. And so, each year, as Black families laid out picnic blankets and tuned their instruments, they weren't just marking time, they were reclaiming history. Chapter 5. The fight for national recognition, from protest to proclamation. For generations, Juneteenth was held close, celebrated in parks, churches, and backyards by people who knew that true freedom wasn't written into law, but lived in community. Yet for all its power, Juneteenth remained invisible to most Americans. It was rarely taught, rarely televised, rarely mentioned in the halls of power. That began to change not with policy, but with protest. As America stumbled into the 21st century, haunted by its unresolved racial past, Juneteenth moved from the margins to the mainstream. Not through legislation alone, but through collective grief, public reckoning, and the unrelenting push of elders, activists, and everyday people who refused to let history be buried. This chapter traces the path from obscurity to federal recognition, from a whispered tradition to a national holiday. It is the story of how a 94-year-old woman walked thousands of miles to make the country finally listen. The silence before the surge. At the dawn of the 2000s, Juneteenth remained largely unknown outside Black communities. Even as more states formally recognized the holiday, it was rarely included in public school curricula. Federal agencies didn't acknowledge it, employers didn't offer time off, and major media outlets treated it as a cultural footnote, if they covered it at all. Still, the grassroots momentum never stopped. In cities like Tulsa, Oakland, and Philadelphia, Juneteenth festivals were drawing tens of thousands. Local organizers used the day to promote Black businesses, register voters, and teach youth about the real story of emancipation. Hip-hop artists and spoken word poets invoked Juneteenth in their lyrics. Black historians continued the slow work of documentation. But without a national platform, Juneteenth's meaning remained confined. It took a spark to ignite the broader public. That spark came from tragedy. A country awakened. Ferguson, Baltimore, and the echoes of emancipation. In 2014, Michael Brown, an unarmed Black teenager, was shot and killed by a white police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. His body lay in the street for 4 hours. The community exploded in protest, igniting what would become the Black Lives Matter movement. Suddenly, questions of racial injustice were unavoidable. The names piled up. Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, Freddie Gray, Sandra Bland. The list kept growing, and with each case, the country was forced to confront its failure to protect Black lives, legally, culturally, and morally. Juneteenth, long a symbol of delayed freedom, took on new urgency. Protesters began invoking it in speeches, art, and protest chants. Community organizers hosted Juneteenth rallies demanding police reform. Social media turned June 19th into a trending topic, lifting it out of regional anonymity and into the digital bloodstream. What had once been an overlooked day of remembrance was now a rallying cry. Opal Lee, the grandmother of Juneteenth. No figure embodies the fight for federal recognition like Opal Lee, a retired schoolteacher from Fort Worth, Texas. At age 89, she began a campaign few thought possible to make Juneteenth a national holiday. Her method? Walking. In 2016, Lee began a symbolic 1,400-mile journey from Texas to Washington, D.C., walking 2.5 miles each day to represent the 2.5 years it took for news of emancipation to reach enslaved Texans. Along the way, she gathered signatures, gave interviews, and told the Juneteenth story wherever she went. Lee's journey captured hearts. Celebrities, politicians, and news outlets began amplifying her cause. What began as a solo mission became a movement. Her quiet determination reminded the nation of something profound: that justice delayed doesn't mean justice denied, so long as we keep walking. George Floyd and the Juneteenth Surge. The murder of George Floyd in May 2020 was a global breaking point. Millions took to the streets. Corporations released diversity pledges. Institutions scrambled to reckon with their racial blind spots. In the middle of it all, Juneteenth surged forward, no longer just as a holiday, but as a demand. Within weeks, major companies like Nike, Target, and Twitter announced they would recognize Juneteenth as a paid holiday. Universities held educational forums. Cities renamed streets. Public schools revised history curricula to include the story of June 19th, 1865. Even the NFL, long criticized for sidelining racial issues, issued a statement recognizing Juneteenth and committing funding to racial equity initiatives. For the first time, Juneteenth was no longer being whispered. It was being shouted. The legislative push, with public support swelling, the push for federal recognition gained traction in Congress. Legislation to make Juneteenth a national holiday had been introduced multiple times before, often dying in committee. But 2021 was different. Momentum had shifted. The weight of public outrage, media attention, and grassroots activism forced lawmakers to act. In June 2021, the Juneteenth National Independence Day Act passed both the Senate and House with overwhelming bipartisan support. On June 17, 2021, President Joe Biden signed the bill into law, making Juneteenth the 11th federal holiday in the United States. Standing beside him was Opal Lee, smiling through tears. In his remarks, Biden said, "Juneteenth marks both a long, hard night of slavery and subjugation, and a promise of a brighter morning to come. A nation reflects." The first federally recognized Juneteenth was celebrated just 2 days later, on June 19, 2021. Across the country, events ranged from massive concerts and food festivals to solemn vigils and community cleanups. Media outlets ran hour-long specials. School districts hosted public forums. For many Americans, especially those outside the Black community, it was the first time they truly learned the meaning behind the holiday. For others, the day brought mixed emotions. Some feared that Juneteenth would be co-opted, turned into another shallow corporate diversity day. Others worried that recognition would replace responsibility. Still, most saw the moment as overdue and hard won. Juneteenth was no longer just a community tradition. It was American history, the ongoing struggle. Federal recognition did not erase the realities Juneteenth symbolizes. Black Americans still face disproportionate rates of incarceration, maternal mortality, poverty, and police violence. Voting rights remain under assault in several states. School curricula still sanitize slavery and glorify the Confederacy. In this context, Juneteenth isn't a finish line. It's a checkpoint. It reminds us that liberation must be defended. Constantly. That true justice isn't granted. It's built brick by brick through protest, policy, and perseverance. And in the legacy of Opal Lee, it reminds us to keep walking, no matter how long it takes. Chapter 6, Juneteenth Today, Celebration, Commerce, and Cultural Legacy. On June 19th each year, across neighborhoods, parks, and cities from Texas to Minneapolis, from Oakland to Washington, D.C., the air fills with the scent of smoked meat, the beat of drums, and the sounds of Black joy. Children dance in T-shirts emblazoned with the words "free-ish" since 1865. Elders tell stories that span generations. Musicians, poets, and preachers share stages. And families come together, not just to remember, but to rejoice. Juneteenth today is no longer a hidden celebration. It is a national holiday, but its modern form is layered, joyous and complex, reverent and commercialized, intimate and widely publicized. As the nation finally acknowledges its meaning, questions emerge. What does it mean to honor Juneteenth with authenticity? How do we protect its cultural depth from being flattened by corporate branding? This chapter explores the celebration of Juneteenth in its current form, how it's being embraced, marketed, taught, and transformed. A national stage. In the wake of federal recognition in 2021, Juneteenth celebrations exploded in both size and visibility. Major cities now host large-scale festivals that draw thousands. In places like Atlanta, Los Angeles, and Brooklyn, Juneteenth events rival 4th of July celebrations, complete with parades, concerts, food trucks, art exhibits, and film screenings. These gatherings are deeply intentional. Organizers focus on themes of liberation, cultural pride, economic empowerment, and historical education. Local businesses sponsor vendors. Community organizations host voter registration drives. Educational panels are held on topics ranging from mass incarceration to Black entrepreneurship. At the heart of many celebrations is the ancestral connection, the unbroken thread that ties the descendants of the enslaved to their legacy of survival and creativity. Juneteenth is more than a holiday. It's a living classroom. The commercialization debate. With increased visibility came an inevitable wave of commercialization. Major corporations, eager to be on the right side of history, began releasing Juneteenth-themed products, t-shirts, ice cream, party supplies, greeting cards, even watermelon-flavored beverages. Some efforts were genuine and community-supported. Others missed the mark entirely. In 2022, a national retailer faced backlash for releasing a Juneteenth celebration ice cream without consulting any Black-owned brands or historians. Critics called it tone-deaf and exploitative. The product was pulled. The message was clear. Juneteenth isn't for sale. This tension between honoring and exploiting is now at the center of the Juneteenth conversation. For many in the Black community, commercialization isn't the issue itself. After all, Black culture has always fueled global markets. The concern is about authenticity, ownership, and purpose. Are the dollars going to Black-owned businesses? Are the messages grounded in history? Are companies committed beyond a single day? If not, then Juneteenth becomes another emptied ritual, stripped of context, packaged for profit. Education in motion. One of the most powerful evolutions of Juneteenth is its role in education. Across the country, schools have begun integrating Juneteenth into history and social studies curricula. Museums and cultural centers now host exhibits explaining the events of June 19, 1865. Documentaries, podcasts, and children's books are being produced to help families understand the holiday's depth. This shift is crucial. For decades, the American education system largely ignored the full history of slavery, Reconstruction, and Black resistance. Juneteenth, when taught properly, opens the door to honest conversations. It encourages questions like, why did it take 2.5 years for freedom to reach Texas? What happened after emancipation? What does freedom look like today? In this way, Juneteenth is not just a day to reflect on the past. It's an opportunity to teach the next generation about truth, agency, and justice. Black-owned and Black-led. As the holiday grows, so does the emphasis on Black ownership and leadership. Many Juneteenth events prioritize Black vendors, Black artists, and Black speakers. Community leaders are pushing for city contracts and sponsorships to be awarded to Black-owned businesses. Bookstores feature titles by Black authors. Markets showcase goods made by Black creators. This economic empowerment isn't new. It echoes the original Juneteenth gatherings, where freedom was celebrated through self-sufficiency. From the founding of Emancipation Parks to the rise of Black Wall Streets, economic autonomy has always been central to the meaning of freedom. Today's Juneteenth celebrations continue that legacy, inviting participants not only to party, but to invest in Black futures, intersectionality, and inclusivity. Juneteenth may have originated in the Black American experience, but its message of liberation resonates far beyond. Many modern celebrations now incorporate an intersectional lens, lifting up the voices of Black LGBTQ+ people, immigrants, and women. Panels discuss the impact of environmental racism, reproductive justice, and the school-to-prison pipeline. In this way, Juneteenth becomes a platform for unity without erasing the specificity of the Black struggle. It says, freedom for one must mean freedom for all, and it insists that the work of liberation is unfinished until every form of injustice is confronted. The digital era of Juneteenth social media has played a vital role in spreading awareness. Hashtags like Jacques Juneteenth, Jacques Emancipation Day, and Black Liberation now trend globally each June. TikTok creators break down the history in short clips. Instagram feeds light up with artwork, recipes, and reflections. Twitter becomes a space for debate, storytelling, and resistance. For younger generations, many of whom didn't learn about Juneteenth in school, the internet became their first teacher, and in turn,
they became teachers themselves. Digital spaces have made Juneteenth more accessible, but they've also created challenges. Misinformation spreads quickly. Corporate campaigns can dilute the message. That's why digital literacy is now part of the modern celebration, knowing how to find, share, and protect the truth. A day of duality. Perhaps what makes Juneteenth so powerful today is its emotional complexity. It is both celebration and mourning. It honors survival, but acknowledges pain. It is spiritual and political, festive and reflective, loud and reverent. For many, Juneteenth is about gathering with family, barbecuing.
Freedom had finally come, but what did that mean in a world where laws were fragile and racial hatred ran deep? The myth versus Ursus, the moment. One of the greatest misconceptions about Juneteenth is that it marks the day slavery ended in the United States. It doesn't. The Emancipation Proclamation, signed by Lincoln in 1862, technically freed enslaved people in Confederate-held territories. But it was limited. It didn't apply to border states like Kentucky or Missouri, and it had no power in areas still under Confederate control. Enslaved people in Texas were among the last to learn of their freedom, not because they weren't legally freed earlier, but because there had been no one to enforce it. Slaveholders took advantage of this vacuum, relocating to Texas to escape advancing Union armies and continue reaping the rewards of forced labor. The 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery nationwide, wouldn't be ratified until December 1865, 6 months after Juneteenth. In this context, Juneteenth is not about a sweeping legal victory. It's about the delayed reality of freedom. It's about how power, distance, and willful ignorance can distort justice. The first Juneteenth, a day of resistance and rebirth. The year after Granger's proclamation, on June 19, 1866, freed Black Texans organized the first Jubilee Day. It wasn't just a party, it was a statement. They wore their best clothes, even when those clothes were tattered. They gathered in fields and churches, cooked what they could afford, and gave prayers of thanks. The message was clear: we are free, and we will define what freedom means. But white Texas society was hostile. New laws called Black Codes restricted where African Americans could live, work, or even walk without harassment. Despite the threat of violence and legal discrimination, Juneteenth continued to grow each year, spreading from Texas to neighboring states as Black families moved or fled northward during the Great Migration. It became a spiritual day, a cultural day, a day for political strategy and family reunions. Even in the darkest decades of Jim Crow, when lynchings and voter suppression defined Black life, Juneteenth remained a quiet resistance. From memory to marginalization. In the early 20th century, Juneteenth began to fade from public life, laughing, remembering. For others, it's about protest, marching, organizing, speaking truth to power. The duality is the point, because Juneteenth doesn't ask us to forget the struggle. It invites us to remember and to recommit ourselves to the work that remains. Chapter 7, The Future of Juneteenth, From Memory to Movement. On a warm June afternoon, a grandfather hands his granddaughter a folded American flag. They sit together beneath the shade of a tree, surrounded by laughter, music, and community. "You know what this means?" he asks, placing the flag in her lap. She looks up, unsure. He smiles and answers, "It means we keep fighting. It means we remember." This is the emotional essence of Juneteenth today. Not just a day of celebration, but a living commitment. As the nation moves forward, the holiday stands at a crossroads. Will it become another ceremonial day stripped of meaning? Or will it evolve into a national reflection point, a day that calls America to reckon with the truths it often avoids? In this final chapter, we look ahead. What role will Juneteenth play in shaping the future of American identity? What lessons does it carry for generations to come? And how do we ensure that the memory of emancipation becomes a movement toward justice? Institutionalizing remembrance. With Juneteenth now recognized as a federal holiday, there is growing pressure to institutionalize its meaning, to ensure it is taught, honored, and understood beyond the surface level. That means more than just closing government offices. It means investing in education, erecting monuments, funding museums, and preserving oral histories. Schools must be equipped with accurate curricula. Public libraries need programs that center Black voices. Universities must uplift Black scholarship. Just as Independence Day is tied to fireworks and flags, Juneteenth must be anchored in education and reflection. Its future depends on how well we protect its roots. The role of the next generation. The children growing up in the age of national Juneteenth celebrations will determine what the holiday becomes. Will they see it as just another summer break? Or will they be taught what their ancestors endured to give them that freedom? Already, signs of hope abound. Young people are organizing. Juneteenth events, launching cultural platforms, publishing children's books, and producing documentaries. In classrooms and community centers, they are asking deeper questions. Why did it take so long for freedom to arrive? Who gets to define freedom today? How do we move from symbolic victories to structural change? The challenge will be to keep the momentum grounded, not just in hashtags or brand campaigns, but in lived experiences and active engagement. Juneteenth as a global lens. While Juneteenth is distinctly American, its themes are universal. Across the world, nations grapple with the legacies of colonization, slavery, and racial inequality. From the Caribbean to South Africa, Brazil to the United Kingdom, there are parallel stories of delayed freedom and ongoing struggle. Juneteenth offers a global model of remembrance, a ritual of honoring the moment when chains were broken, even if true justice is still out of reach. As global conversations around reparations, decolonization, and historical justice grow louder, Juneteenth may serve as a template for international healing. It is not a day that belongs only to the past, but a compass for global progress. Protecting against erasure. Despite its growth, Juneteenth remains vulnerable. There are efforts in some states to ban the teaching of divisive concepts, often a euphemism for Black history. Some schools have removed or watered down lessons on slavery and racism. Others have avoided mentioning Juneteenth altogether. This is not new. Erasure has always been a threat. But this time, the infrastructure is stronger. National recognition, digital archives, and community-led initiatives are working to safeguard the holiday's meaning. Organizations like the National Juneteenth Observance Foundation and the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture are documenting, archiving, and disseminating accurate history. Still, vigilance is necessary. Freedom must always be defended, especially when memory becomes inconvenient. Expanding the meaning of freedom. What does freedom mean in the 21st century? That question is at the heart of Juneteenth's evolving mission. Is freedom the right to vote without suppression? The right to breathe without fear? The right to earn a living wage, receive health care, access education, live in clean neighborhoods, and walk safely home? Juneteenth challenges America to broaden its definition of liberty, not just as independence from slavery, but as full human dignity. To honor Juneteenth is to ask, who is still waiting for their freedom today? Juneteenth as a movement. To truly fulfill its potential, Juneteenth must move beyond celebration and into mobilization. That means using the day to push for voting rights, criminal justice reform, educational equity, and economic justice. It means linking past and present, connecting the story of General Order No. 3 to the systemic inequities that persist. It also means holding power accountable. Juneteenth is a reminder that justice delayed is not justice denied, but only if we keep showing up, keep building, keep demanding. In that spirit, it becomes more than a holiday. It becomes a movement, a future rooted in truth. As we imagine the future of Juneteenth, one truth remains clear. It belongs to the people, to the descendants of those who waited 2.5 years to hear they were free, to the generations who survived Jim Crow, to the children born into a world still learning how to honor their ancestors. Its meaning cannot be dictated by politicians or corporations. Its story must be protected by those who lived it, loved it, and lifted it. And so, each June 19th, when communities gather across the country, under tents, in churches, in classrooms, on porches, let the day be more than symbolic. Let it be sacred. Let it be a call to action. Let it be freedom, still in progress. Why? Because the Black freedom struggle entered new arenas. The NAACP, W.E.B. Du Bois, and legal campaigns against segregation shifted focus from historical memory to legislative change. Urbanization and economic hardship made large-scale gatherings harder to organize. Public schools didn't teach Juneteenth. White newspapers ignored it. And Black communities, especially those who had moved north, began to prioritize July 4th, hoping to claim a stake in American identity. Yet in pockets of Texas and across the South, elders kept the flame alive. Some held small barbecues. Others gathered in parks. A few whispered the story to grandchildren, ensuring the date wasn't lost, even if it wasn't widely known. A political resurrection. Juneteenth in the modern era. In the 1960s and 70s, the civil rights movement gave Juneteenth new life. Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination in 1968 devastated the nation, but it also inspired acts of reflection. The Poor People's Campaign, organized in King's honor, culminated in a protest in Washington, D.C., where many participants from Texas held a Juneteenth commemoration. Throughout the 1970s, Juneteenth celebrations returned in full force, especially in Black-majority cities like Houston, Dallas, and Atlanta. Activists emphasized cultural pride, political education, and economic empowerment. It wasn't just about commemorating the past. It was about using history to fight for the present. In 1980, Texas became the first state to declare Juneteenth an official holiday, thanks to efforts led by Al Edwards, a Black state legislator and lifelong advocate for historical justice. Other states followed slowly. Still, for decades, Juneteenth remained a regional or community celebration, rarely recognized at the national level. That is, until the 21st century brought a long overdue reckoning. The push for federal recognition. The turning point came in the wake of high-profile killings. Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor. In 2020, as millions protested systemic racism, Juneteenth surged into national consciousness. Corporations released statements. School districts began honoring the date. Cities renamed streets. And at the center of it all was Opal Lee, a then 93-year-old retired teacher from Texas who had walked
from Fort Worth to Washington, D.C., petitioning for Juneteenth to become a federal holiday. Her quiet tenacity moved the nation. On June 17, 2021, President Joe Biden signed the Juneteenth National Independence Day Act into law. Flanked by Lee, Kamala Harris, and other leaders, he called it a day of profound weight and power. What Juneteenth means today. In 2025, Juneteenth is more than a day off work. It's a mirror, a way to reflect on American promises made and broken. Today's celebrations range from barbecues and musical festivals to voter registration drives and academic lectures. It's a fusion of culture and critique, joy and justice. Yet the fight isn't over. Black Americans still face systemic inequality in wealth, healthcare, education, policing, Juneteenth, then, is not a victory lap. It's a checkpoint, a reminder that freedom delayed is freedom denied. And every year we remember the men, women, and children in Galveston who were the last to know, and still they rejoiced. Chapter 2, The Emancipation Proclamation, A Promise. Half kept. When President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation on January 1, 1863, it was a moment of radical clarity in a country torn by war and contradiction. The document declared that all persons held as slaves in rebelling Confederate states were to be set free. Overnight, the Civil War gained a moral compass, and the fight for the Union became explicitly a fight against slavery. But here's the uncomfortable truth. The Emancipation Proclamation didn't free all enslaved people. In fact, for many, it changed nothing in practice. Freedom had been promised, but not delivered. Not yet. This chapter peels back the patriotic gloss often painted over the proclamation and reveals it for what it was: a political maneuver, a limited legal document, and a symbolic spark that would take years and hundreds of thousands of lives to ignite real change. The strategic roots of emancipation. To understand the Emancipation Proclamation, we must first understand Abraham Lincoln's position. Though often remembered as the great emancipator, Lincoln's views on slavery evolved over time and were deeply intertwined with his responsibility to preserve the Union. In 1861, when the Civil War began, Lincoln's official stance was not to abolish slavery outright, but to prevent its expansion into new territories. His hope was that slavery would wither away gradually, but as the war dragged on and casualties mounted, it became clear that moral clarity was essential, not just to unite the North, but to undermine the South. Slavery was the economic backbone of the Confederacy. By declaring slaves in Confederate territories free, Lincoln aimed to disrupt Southern labor, encourage rebellion among enslaved people, and add pressure on the Confederacy from within. In short, the Emancipation Proclamation was both a humanitarian act and a strategic weapon. Who it freed and who it didn't. The most misunderstood aspect of the proclamation is its scope. It applied only to Confederate states actively rebelling against the Union. That meant states like South Carolina, Mississippi, and Texas were named. But border states, such as Kentucky, Maryland, Missouri, and Delaware, where slavery was still legal but which remained loyal to the Union, were not included. Slavery remained untouched in those regions until the 13th Amendment was ratified in December 1865. Moreover, even in Confederate areas, the proclamation had no real enforcement power. Union troops had to physically occupy territory to enforce emancipation. In Texas, which was far removed from the front lines, no such enforcement came until June 1865. The legal declaration was powerful in its symbolism, but weak in its reach. It proclaimed freedom, but the burden of delivering it fell to Black Americans themselves, many of whom risked their lives to escape plantations and enlist in the Union Army. The role of Black Americans in their own liberation. If the Emancipation Proclamation was the match, Black Americans were the fire. More than 180,000 Black men joined the Union Army and Navy after 1863, serving in segregated units like the famed 54th Massachusetts Infantry Regiment. Their courage on the battlefield and in acts of civil resistance demonstrated a truth too often erased. Enslaved people didn't wait passively for freedom. They seized it. In cities and towns across the South, enslaved men and women fled to Union lines. They offered intelligence, served as scouts, and built critical infrastructure. Some were labeled contraband and detained in camps. Others were conscripted into labor or combat. Many died of disease, exposure, or violence, but all contributed to the Union's ultimate victory. These actions put pressure on Northern politicians to uphold the promise of the Emancipation Proclamation. It wasn't just a document on paper. It was a commitment now etched in blood. The Global Reaction. The Emancipation Proclamation sent shockwaves around the world. Britain and France, who had considered recognizing the Confederacy to protect their cotton supply, pulled back. Lincoln's proclamation framed the war as a moral crusade. Supporting the South now meant supporting slavery. Abolitionists across Europe celebrated the move, while Confederate diplomats scrambled to contain the political fallout. Black leaders in the North, like Frederick Douglass, hailed the proclamation as an essential step forward, but continued to press for broader civil rights and full citizenship. As Douglass famously stated, "We are not to be saved by the captain of the ship, but by ourselves." Resistance and retaliation in the South. The South reacted with predictable fury. Slaveholders who had once clung to the myth of paternalism, claiming they cared for the people they enslaved, responded with brutality. In some regions, the mere rumor of emancipation prompted violent reprisals. Plantation owners executed enslaved people who tried to flee. Others moved farther west, especially into Texas, believing it a safe haven from Union interference. That's one reason why, even after the proclamation, slavery intensified in Texas in 1863 and 1864. The Confederate leadership declared that Black Union soldiers captured in battle would not be treated as prisoners of war. Many were executed on the spot or returned to slavery. One of the most infamous examples was the Fort Pillow Massacre in 1864, where over 200 Black Union soldiers were slaughtered after surrendering. The limits of paper declarations. Lincoln knew the proclamation alone could not end slavery. In his own words, he admitted it might be overturned by future courts or Congresses. That's why, in 1864, he began pushing hard for a constitutional amendment to end slavery permanently. The path to the 13th Amendment was not easy. Even in the North, there was fierce resistance. Many white
Americans feared economic competition, or simply didn't believe in racial equality. It wasn't until after Lincoln's re-election and the Union's growing victories that enough momentum built to pass the amendment. The Emancipation Proclamation, then, was a moral bridge, leading America from what it was toward what it could become. A legacy of complicated freedom. Today, the Emancipation Proclamation is often taught as a liberating moment. But it's more accurate to say it marked the beginning of a long, painful journey. For many enslaved people, the news came late, or not at all. For others, freedom was immediately undercut by economic exploitation, racial terrorism, and legal suppression. The promises made in 1863 would not see full expression until generations later. And even now, some would argue they remain unfulfilled. Still, the proclamation planted a flag in the American conscience. It signaled a national shift, imperfect and incomplete, but irreversible. And when General Granger arrived in Texas 2 years later, carrying the words of that same proclamation, the ripple finally reached the outer edges of the Confederacy. Juneteenth was born not just of freedom, but of delay, deception, and determination. Chapter 3. Reconstruction and the Rise of Jim Crow, a celebration under siege. Juneteenth was born out of the chaos of emancipation, but it matured during the treacherous years that followed. From 1865 to 1877, the United States entered a volatile era known as Reconstruction, a time that promised racial justice but delivered only fragments. For formerly enslaved Black Americans, freedom had finally been declared. But the struggle to live it was just beginning. It was during this fragile window, where hope flickered and fear loomed, that Juneteenth took root as both celebration and resistance. Yet as the federal government slowly withdrew protection, the South retaliated with new systems of oppression. And so, while Black communities gathered each June 19th to honor emancipation, the nation around them quietly rebuilt slavery's shadow, Jim Crow. This chapter explores how the promise of Juneteenth was tested and nearly silenced by the backlash that followed. The freedmen's first years, brief brightness.
In the immediate aftermath of slavery, black
Americans wasted no time claiming their newfound freedom. Schools were opened, churches formed, families reunited. Formerly enslaved people changed their names, negotiated wages, bought land, and established entire towns where black self-governance thrived. One of the most significant efforts came from the Freedmen's Bureau, a federal agency created in 1865 to assist formerly enslaved individuals. It provided food, health care, legal aid, and education. Tens of thousands of black adults and children learned to read during these years. It was a revolution not just of literacy, but of self-definition. Juneteenth celebrations grew organically within this momentum. The date became a kind of spiritual checkpoint, acknowledging both the trauma of slavery and the resilience of those who survived it. But the tide was already turning. The Southern retaliation, black codes, and broken promises. White Southern leaders, embittered by defeat and threatened by black autonomy, began to craft a new legal structure to regain control. These were the Black Codes, a set of laws designed to restrict the rights of African Americans. In many states, black people could be arrested for vagrancy, essentially for not having a job, and then leased out for labor, essentially reintroducing slavery under another name. Voting rights were denied through poll taxes, literacy tests, and grandfather clauses. Interracial marriage was criminalized. Testifying against white people in court became nearly impossible. Violence became a tool of political suppression. White supremacist groups like the Ku Klux Klan, founded in 1865, terrorized black communities with beatings, lynchings, and arson. In this climate, even attending a Juneteenth celebration could be an act of defiance. Despite this, the celebrations continued, often in secluded fields or churches, protected by community vigilance and faith. Reconstruction's collapse, the federal retreat. By the 1870s, Northern appetite for racial justice was waning. The economy was faltering. Political will was weakening. White Southerners were violently reclaiming power through paramilitary organizations, fraud, and voter intimidation. In 1877, the federal government officially ended Reconstruction. The Compromise of 1877, a backroom political deal, handed the presidency to Rutherford B. Hayes in exchange for the removal of federal troops from the South. With that, black Americans were left exposed. Local and state governments swiftly passed laws enforcing segregation and curtailing black civil rights. Schools were defunded. Land ownership was blocked. Public services were divided, separate but equal, in name only. These systems would later become known as Jim Crow laws, and they would define the South for nearly a century. But even in the face of this darkness, Juneteenth remained a flickering light. In some communities, it became more than a party. It became political. Juneteenth as resistance. Juneteenth gatherings in the late 19th and early 20th centuries were rarely just about food and music. They were also moments of strategic organizing. Speakers would deliver fiery addresses, urging black citizens to vote, where allowed, build businesses, and educate their children. Ministers tied emancipation to spiritual liberation. And in places where celebrations were banned or discouraged, black communities bought land, emancipation parks, just to ensure they could gather freely. In 1872, black leaders in Houston, Texas pooled $800 to purchase 10 acres of land for Juneteenth celebrations. They named it Emancipation Park, and it still exists today as a monument to cultural memory. Still, these victories were hard won. White towns often denied permits for Juneteenth parades. Black revelers risked violence just to publicly gather. Even in the North, few outside the black community acknowledged the date. The Great Migration and Juneteenth's diaspora? Between 1916 and 1970, more than 6 million black Americans fled the South in what became known as the Great Migration. They sought economic opportunity, safety, and basic civil rights. As they moved to cities like Chicago, Detroit, Philadelphia, and Los Angeles, they carried their traditions with them, including Juneteenth. Yet urban environments were different. Local governments didn't recognize the holiday. Black workers rarely had time off. Slowly, in many places, Juneteenth faded, replaced by July 4th as a more widely accepted celebration, even though it represented a freedom African Americans had been denied. Still, in Southern enclaves and family homes, the memory was